Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And some breaking news we just found out prior to us releasing this episode, just prior to us recording, Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics has just been awarded the Defensive Player of the Year Award. He's the first guard to get this since Gary the Glove Payton received it back in the 90s. So, you know, it's been a minute. Brian, what are your thoughts on Marcus Smart winning this award?
Well, congratulations to Marcus Smart. My pick was definitely Mikal Bridges. Personally, I thought he had the best case, but I'm just happy that a guard finally won the award. It's been way too long, in my opinion. But, you know, we all know Marcus Smart has been a top defender since he got in the league. So this is really no surprise. And obviously Boston's defense is a big reason why they had that big second half comeback. So no surprise again. Congrats to Marcus Smart. No surprise to me.
Yeah, the top-rated defense in the NBA led by Marcus Smart. I agree with you. There was definitely a case for Mikal Bridges. But either way, it could have gone Mikal. It could have gone Marcus Smart. I would have been a happy camper with either result at the end of the day. So, yeah, props to him. I'm sure he's going to be due for a nice payday after this or a nice extension because he is the heart and soul of that Boston Celtics team. Tell me I'm wrong otherwise.
No, you're not wrong. And in essence, Dan, if as long as it wasn't Rudy Gobert, you're a happy camper, right?
So. You didn't need to say that, but
it was heavily implied. Definitely implied.
All right, guys. Well, you know, we just wanted to get that breaking news out of the way. I'm sure it'll be on people's timelines and people's feed sooner rather than later. But we're gonna kick it off with our, I guess, our updates on the fantasy or on the NBA playoffs, just how they've panned out so far. We have only watched one game so far of each of the conferences, of each of the series, and we just have some general thoughts. So we're going to kick it off with the East, and guys, it's no surprise what game we're going to be talking about first. It is the Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics. My biggest takeaways are that Ramadan Irving is a thing. I am blown away that this man is participating in Ramadan and just shooting the lights out. And is still just an absolute killer. Props to him. I can only imagine. You know, he had an efficiency of like 60%, something crazy like that. Put up 39 points, great on the defensive end. KD struggled this game, in my opinion, but he still was able to chip in towards the end. To me, though, Brian, the biggest takeaway here, and it goes back to it, that defense, man. They have to find a way of just clogging the paint, filling in the holes. That way they don't get exposed, especially towards the end of the game. I understand that that Jason Tatum game winner was kind of a fluke in the sense of no one was like in position, ready to go. But they should have, I mean, let's rewind it back, man. They should have been prepared for that series. Why did they have three guards on the floor against a tall Boston Celtics team towards the end? I just think that they played the end, the final minute, very poorly, and they got exposed on the defensive end in a very dramatic fashion. Boston clearly has the momentum right now, but I would not sleep on these Brooklyn Nets players. I mean, Kyrie's going to do his thing. KD's definitely going to come back to prove a point with a better game in the next one, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to overcome them. I would not be surprised if they won the next game, go to Brooklyn with a series split. And yeah, I mean, you and I called it from the beginning. It's a 7-game series in both of our opinions. Let's see how it pans out.
Yeah, I mean, these things do happen, obviously. Not, you don't ever want it to happen on the last play of the game, but shout out to Jason Tatum, man. He made a good move to the basket, a really smart spin move that I don't think Irving was expecting at all. I think it was Marcus Smart that actually made the pass to Tatum, so it's kind of crazy how that worked out. Been a pretty good week for Marcus Smart. But all in all, man, I will say this game was as tight as we expected it to be. A lot of back and forth. I still think that, though, Dan, when Ben Simmons returns, he is going to be the difference maker. I know that it's crazy. I know he hasn't played basketball all season. But to me, that extra 3 to 5, 10 minutes that you get him in the fourth quarter, he's going to be a big body to put on a Jaylen Brown, on a Jason Tatum, to stop them when they're going off. I really do think he's going to be that difference in the series. I think it's going to be something like 2-2 when Simmons comes back. But some guys that I really wanted to call out in this game, Al Horford, he played 41 minutes. He gave you 20 points and 15 boards. Can we really expect that again from Al Horford moving forward? He played 41 minutes, guys. I just don't see it. KD was obviously guarding Tatum on that play. He did get caught ball watching. So it was not a great performance for KD in a game one. And it's tough to see, man. Kyrie definitely did his thing. And I was hoping for better from KD. But Dan, I mean, I think you and I both know we expect him to go off in game two.
My biggest, so I want to answer one of your questions with the fact that I can't expect this from Al Horford moving forward. Maybe not the 41 minutes and that exact stat line, but I could easily see Al Horford going off for a double-double consistently in the series due to the lack of size that Brooklyn has to match up with him. I mean, for God's sakes, they only have Nicholas Claxton right now, who is a liability, kind of like Ben Simmons. If you looked at his free throw shooting stats, I think he was like 1 for 5 or something like that. It was just atrocious. I think that Al Horford clearly wins a matchup there. He can clearly get a double-double every game. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I think that KD, this is an anomaly for him. He usually doesn't come up so short, so to speak, in these big playoff games. So I don't expect that to be a reoccurrence moving forward. And let's just wait and see on Ben Simmons, man. I have to see it before I believe it, at least with Simmons, because he hasn't he leaves a lot to be desired as of late, given the lack of anything we've seen from him personally.
Yeah. That makes sense. I just don't want us to lose sight of the fact that this was still a 1-point game, and KD played, from his standards, pretty below average. And then you mix that with an Al Horford 2015 game. I'm just saying, one play different. We're looking at a Brooklyn 1-0 series, and it's still not too late for them to take game two and leave Boston with a potential split, which is still a win if you look at it.
I mean, Brian, let's be real. How many times do we expect Kyrie to shoot the ball out, like the lights out like that?
I mean, I think that, but then he continues to prove me wrong. And you got to think about it, Dan. He also has some pretty fresh legs. He sat a lot of this season. So I do expect a pretty big series from Kyrie. We saw that between the back and forth between him and the fans, that I think he's going to be very locked in, especially for the games that are in Boston. I anticipate a very strong showing from Kyrie for the rest of the series. Maybe not as good, but hey, I mean, he just needs another bucket from KD, and this would have been a win, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, close series. We'll wait and see. It could have gone either way, that one game. Let's see how each team adjusts and reacts accordingly.
Yeah.
Moving forward to the next series that we want to talk about, it is the Toronto Raptors versus the Philadelphia 76ers. I want to give a quick update. As you guys may have known, Scottie Barnes did go down with an injury in game one. As of the time of this recording, Scottie Barnes is probably out for game two. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but he was in a walking boot, so we might as well take it. And given Thad Young's injury, you know, we have Gary Trent Jr. as questionable. Let's see if he plays. I just think that this Raptors team is unfortunately falling apart at the worst possible time. And, you know, the other side of this is that the Philadelphia team is heating up at the best possible time. I mean, we have to look at Tyrese Maxey, who went off in his first career playoff start with 38 points in a playoff game. That is bananas, bro. You know, James Harden did his thing. He got that nice double-double with the assists. Joel Embiid didn't even need to put up 20 points, and he got a mean double-double. And I think that the player that surprised us all is the fact that Tobias Harris had over 25 points this game. I mean, when you have the Sixers clicking like that with the four of the five starters going off for almost 20 points, it's going to be hard for any team to overcome that. And I think the Raptors, with, you know, their rookie of the year finalist Scottie Barnes going down, it's just demoralizing. Let's wait and see if they can bounce back. I mean, I give Nick Nurse credit. He will definitely find a way to get his guys motivated, get them in the game, but it's not looking good with a game two outlook personally.
Yeah, no, you changed your tune on Toronto pretty quickly there, Dan. Who knew all it took was a Scottie Barnes injury for the whole season to be derailed? Look, it's one game. I agree with you. I think Philly is definitely in control here. I mean, I did pick them to win it for this reason. They have the two best players. If those guys are playing well, they're going to beat Toronto. And that's, again, no slight to the Raptors. We all give them credit. We both think it's going to be still a deep series. But without Scottie Barnes, I mean, that changes the outlook pretty crazy as far as this series goes. Obviously, Maxey with 38 points. The fact that Joel Embiid went 5-for-15 and the Sixers won by 20, the shock that they shot so well and dropped 131 in game one on Toronto. Those are the numbers that really popped out to me the most and really stood out. Philly, again, like you mentioned, Dan, they're looking good. I think they'll still win in 6 or 7. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but without Scottie Barnes, Toronto's in a big, big world of hurry here.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, I'm not ruling Toronto out by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just not looking good for game two, at least. I have all the faith in the world, though, that Nick Nurse can pivot his team and can somehow find a way to get the best out of all his players with this time. I mean, I agree with you. Philadelphia has the top two players, but I think that at least with the next three, I probably give the edge to Toronto. That's how confident I am in them. So, you know, great game for Toby, great game for Maxey. Let's see if they can repeat. Game two is going to be a fun one. And I'm most curious to see what happens when the series shifts back to Toronto. So let's just wait and see.
Yeah, I want to see if Toby can continue this because I think he had a pretty decent end to the season. I want to see if he can sustain this performance, because if he can be that third star for Philly in addition to Tyrese Maxey, I mean, you pretty much have four stars at that point in time.
Yeah, just absolutely filthy. They'll give any team in the East a run for their money at that point if that's the case.
Facts.
So, guys, we're going to transition to the next series that we want to focus on. It was the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Chicago Bulls. I'm going to be honest, man. I don't think either one of us expected this game to be as close as it was. I mean, we both agreed that Chicago's still a very deep and competitive team. Obviously, the loss of Lonzo Ball is going to probably be the biggest downside to them for this playoff series. But, I mean, dude, DeMar DeRozan did his thing. Nikola Vucevic got a mean double-double, and Zach LaVine is still a lights-out scorer. I mean, if it weren't for Giannis getting just absolutely disgusting with this game and that 27 and 16 outing, who knows how the game pivots. I think Brook Lopez coming back, big pivotal player for Milwaukee. I think he's probably going to be the difference maker for any series moving forward, because we know what to expect from Holiday. We know what to expect from Middleton and Giannis. But Brook Lopez is that X factor. If he can keep matching up well against any team, I think that this is going to be a quick series for the Bulls. But I wouldn't be surprised if they can sneak one or two games out of Milwaukee, given how this game played out.
Yeah, I think the thing with Milwaukee that is so scary, Dan, is any one of Giannis, Middleton, or Drew Holiday could easily go off in the last 5 minutes of a game. And that's kind of what happened here. I felt like Giannis was dealing with some foul trouble because Caruso was just being an absolute pest, drawing charges left and right, just getting under his skin a little bit. But at the end, the last 5 minutes, when things were close, Giannis came in and the game was just over at that point in time. He did what he needed to do. He got the ball in the right player's hands and he made things happen. That's what Giannis does. It's why the Bucks are so scary, because even with Middleton shooting 4-for-13 or Drew Holiday shooting 6-for-16, they're still good enough to even overcome that. They're deep. It's scary. This series kind of felt like that game one kind of felt like a 90s series, Dan, as far as the physicality, the defense. I mean, the Bulls shot 32% from the field and 19% from three, guys. Like, they did not shoot well at all, and a lot of that goes to credit for the Milwaukee. That's ultimately going to be their calling card, is their defense. It's why they're the defending champions, and kind of like you mentioned, it's kind of why we expect them to move forward in this series.
Yeah, let's wait and see. I do expect this series to continue to be as physical as this game one was. I have no indications to expect otherwise, so this is going to be a nice, like, gritty throwback series that I think the certain NBA aficionados are definitely going to love.
Yeah, and the thing with The thing with Chicago, guys, we did kind of sell them a little bit short. I know they kind of started declining at the right time, but they're still rivals of the Bucks. They're still scrappy. They're playing hard. They have three stars, much like a lot of these other teams in the East with DeRozan, LaVine, and Vucevic. I mean, they could easily go off. I don't expect them to struggle as much with their shot in future games, but I do think as after watching game one, I could see this being a little bit of a deeper series, Dan.
Yeah, I think we both had it at five games. Easily could go six or seven deep with just how amazing these players are. So we're going to transition to the last Eastern Conference series. It was the Heat versus the Hawks. I don't want to be biased, so I'm not going to focus too much on the Heat. But, man, they locked up Trae Young, man. That was easily Trae Young's worst playoff performance of his career, of his young career so far, hands down. I mean, Atlanta as a whole just played terribly. Bogdan played awful. Trae Young played awful. I think the only bright spot I saw was DeAndre Hunter, personally, just watching the game. But they definitely need to pivot. They definitely need to, you know, revamp, reevaluate their scheme, because Miami, they stole their candy, man. It was just an absolute steal from the get-go, and they just didn't let their foot off the gas pedal.
Yeah, and some props to Miami, Dan. I know you did a great job of not over complimenting, so I appreciate that as always. But you know, they locked in, man. They played defense like they played in the regular season, which was elite. They had Bam Adebayo on the perimeter guarding Trae Young. I think that's a kind of a different look that Trae might not be used to. So, you know, we're going to have to see how he adjusts. Obviously, John Collins is transitioning back from injury too. So we're going to see how he ramps up as the series goes on and how much of an impact he might even be able to make. But I think the guy they're really going to need a lot more from is going to be Bogey. Bogdan Bogdanovic. I mean, we've seen he can win you a game. He is that good at shooting. He can absolutely take over. I mean, Bogdanovic went 0-for-8, guys. I don't know how often that's ever happened in the past, but I just don't anticipate that to be the thing moving forward. And also Trae Young going 1-for-12. I mean, look, credit to the Heat defense. They played elite. They played lockdown. They deserve this victory. I just think things are going to be a little tighter in game two, Dan.
Let's wait and see. I mean, I don't want to get overconfident for the Miami Heat fan standpoint, but it all depends on how Nate McMillan pivots and if they can get better offensive schemes. Miami just locked Trae Young and just in general the Hawks down very well with switches. And, you know, 1 through 5, they can switch very well. I will say one thing, Brian. Playoff Kyle Lowry does seem to be ready and to go, so it's going to be interesting to see if he can sustain that level of just overall effectiveness in the next several games and series. So that's the biggest takeaway I had. And just let's see if the Heat can keep it hot. When they're hot, no one can stop them. But if they get on a cold run, that's where things get really tough for them. So I'm fascinated to see how this series goes. But I have full faith that this Heat can actually pull that gentleman sweep off.
Yeah, I could see 5 games. I could see 6. We'll see again how they adjust in game 2, but I wouldn't get too excited. I know you want to, you know, crown Kyle Lowry already, but let's see it for a full series first before we declare that playoff Kyle Lowry is back, Dan.
All right. Yeah, no, there's indications. That's all there's I wanted to allude to.
It's leading to winning basketball.
You were bagging on him early, like, you know, towards the end of the season. So it's just refreshing to see him put up stats.
I agree. I want to see him do well. I want to see him do well for you, Dan. So hopefully he can continue.
I appreciate that. All right, guys. So we're going to pivot to the West. We're going to start off with probably the most surprising but entertaining series so far in the West, the Memphis Grizzlies versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. Brian, I want to know your thoughts, because I called this from the beginning, man. When we gave our predictions, I was the one that said I could easily see a Minnesota upset. I think that Anthony Edwards is going to go off. Both those things came true. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm starting to see more and more a young Michael Jordan in Anthony Edwards. And it feels weird coming out of my mouth, but he's got the personality, the fearlessness. His jump shot is looking really good. I mean, he is really confident pulling up from 3. And he's only 20 years old and in his second year in the league. Anthony Edwards is one of the future faces as far as I'm concerned. As far as the Grizzlies go, it's a really disappointing way to start the playoffs after just an amazing regular season they had, man. They didn't play to me with the same sense of urgency that the Timberwolves did. And I found Ja Morant a couple of times just kind of ball watching on defense. Again, I'm nitpicking when it comes to Morant on that, but at this point in the playoffs, every possession really matters to me. And when you're a superstar and an MVP candidate, like, those are the types of things I want to see from you in really close playoff games. But I tip my cap to the Timberwolves, man. They are not going to be a tough out at all. Obviously, they've already done their job of getting one road game in. So the Grizzlies have some work to do, man. They to me, game two is almost a must win for Memphis. Like, they cannot go down 0-2 to Minnesota, because those fans were crazy for the play-in game. I can't imagine what they would sound like up 2-0 on the two seed.
I'm so aligned with you there. I was shocked at the fact that the D'Angelo Russell had a really bad game, at least from a scoring perspective, but was still able to contribute. And then Malik Beasley just came in and did his thing as a sixth man. I mean, when you look at the box score, when you watch the game, Memphis just looked like they had everything going for all their players, yet somehow Minnesota was able to pull it off. I mean, Memphis is, in my opinion, a deeper team. Every one of those players can go off, but Minnesota just seemed to click better and just seem to be more effective at getting the job done. So it's going to be really interesting seeing the series in game two. I do agree with you. I expect Memphis to come out with a higher sense of urgency for game two after they got shockingly, you know, they got surprised, right, in game one. So I just expect more urgency from these players, and hopefully they can at least take one game back and even up the series heading back to Minnesota.
Yeah, and the main sleeper I'd say to call out is someone that I actually had in fantasy, Jaden McDaniels from the Timberwolves. In 25 minutes, he had 15 points, 7 boards, a couple assists, a steal. He was 5 for 6. He shot well. He had the highest plus minus on the team at plus 19. So in his minutes off the bench, he really contributed and made sure that Anthony Edwards and you know, Towns didn't have to do it all themselves also.
I'll take it one step further, man. I think that it's not just McDaniels, but Jared Vanderbilt. Like, they're fours that can just be so versatile. I think they're going to be a very pivotal role in the success of Minnesota. Like, they will go as far as those jackknives can go.
I agree. And I think right behind Brooklyn, Boston, this to me is the most entertaining series for the rest of the first round, for sure.
Easily. I mean, besides just it being surprising and close, It's full of highlight reels. I mean, guys, how many highlights did we get from that game? It was just nasty. I can't wait to see the next one, man.
Agreed. I can't wait.
All right, guys, we're going to move on to the next series. This was a surprising series for me. Brian and I kind of called it, but it's a Mavs versus a Jazz series. The Jazz did win this game, I think 99-93. But guys, the story there is the fact that Luka Doncic didn't play and they only lost by 6. I think that is two testaments. A testament to how good Dallas now has rotation-wise. I mean, Spencer Dinwiddie is a completely different player from who he was with Washington. I think he's much more valuable and overall effective with Dallas. Jalen Brunson does his thing. Everyone does their thing. DFS, it's just great to watch. And then I think it's also a testament to Utah getting exposed, man. I mean, how are they giving up that many points to the Dallas Mavericks without Luka? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. If you watch the game, Donovan Mitchell, yeah, sure, he had a great second half. But, like, man, if it weren't for Bojan going off in the beginning, this game goes down a very different way. And even I have to give credit here, though, even though he didn't have a great game from a statistic standpoint, I think Rudy Gobert was the best player on the floor for Utah, which just shows that Utah has a lot of work to do if they want to move forward with their playoff run.
Yeah, great call out on Gobert. He played with a ton of energy in game one. I had actually put the under for rebounds. I think it was like set at 14.5. I was like, there's no way. This guy gets like 15, 16 boards. It was a monster game one, and they needed it because they came out, they set the tone on the road. They took the road game. That's huge, obviously. And now for Dallas, to me, Dan, like, the pressure is all on them, because now you're likely not going to have Luka Doncic game two. You do not want to go to Utah down 2-0. It's not a good place to be, especially being down with your main superstar out. Game two is a must win. You need Jalen Brunson and Dinwiddie to be those guys who can get you a bucket down the stretch when they need it, because it's going to be that type of series. This is going to be close. This series could potentially go seven, and I think it's kind of been underrated for a lot of folks, but the Jazz can definitely go for the throat by going up 2-0. History has shown, though, Dan, like, when the team goes up 1-0, they do kind of tend to take their foot off the gas, knowing that they're going to have games 3 and 4 back at home. So I'm really curious to see how Utah is going to look in game two. And all in all, though, kind of as you touched on, I do have to give respect to Dallas. Obviously, they did lose, but they did look pretty damn good without Luka, and they kept it very close. It was just one of those games where it was lost in the last few minutes. And Bojan, man, for Utah, he has been special. They were definitely running the offense through him in game one. So let's see if they continue that strategy in game two. I think Dallas and Jason Kidd are going to make some adjustments, though.
Easily, I expect Jason Kidd to make adjustments moving forward. And, you know, Salt Lake City is not a great place to play basketball in. It's been chronicled that opponents just don't like going into that building in a playoff atmosphere. So I think game two is a must win for Dallas, just to make sure that they're in a good position for when Luka comes back.
Yep.
All right, guys. With that being said, we're going to transition to the next series we want to cover, the Warriors versus the Nuggets. Brian, did you expect Jordan Poole to go off for 30 points in the starting lineup? Because I sure as hell did not. That was an insane effort from him. I thought he was snubbed from the most improved player finalist ballot. I mean, no offense, or I don't want to take anything away from the other finalists, but Jordan Poole's just had an amazing year, so I definitely want to recognize him for that. But outside of him, man, I just think that the Warriors clicked so well. Klay seems to be getting it finally at the right time, you know, with the last couple games in the season and heading into this game. He just seems to be clicking. Draymond obviously does his thing as the point forward. This team is going to be scary, and I love Jokic's game. I think that he's probably going to be the MVP, but there's just no way in hell that they can take down a Warriors team with Steph Curry coming off the bench and probably slating to the starting lineup to start dropping like 20 plus points a night.
Yeah, the Warriors are looking straight up scary, Dan. I mean, they're already up 1-0. Jordan Poole was the only Warrior starter that even played in the fourth quarter of this one. So that's just great news for a veteran team like Golden State, and scary news for the rest of the league, because you're going to get Steph on fresh legs, Draymond on fresh legs, Klay Thompson on fresh legs. Obviously, Steph was a little rusty in his first game back, and he was off the bench, but you just got to imagine that they're going to continue to ramp up his minutes and his role. I hate to say that there's no chance, but it's very unlikely that Denver wins this series. I think Golden State is on a moon rocket to the conference finals. I think there's no question it's going to be them and the Suns. This kind of feels like a warm-up series for the Warriors a bit. They're deep, and I don't answer questions about their size. I know they don't have a true legitimate center right now, but to be honest, I think they're good enough with that death lineup to shoot most teams out of the league out of any series.
I agree, man. I mean, it doesn't matter for them, at least from a center perspective. They did it so many years without one. I think that they can keep doing it moving forward without one also.
Yep.
That being said, guys, we're going to transition into the last series, the series that we just don't expect to go as deep, maybe right or wrong. The Phoenix Suns versus the New Orleans Pelicans. Brian, I think that New Orleans gave the Phoenix Suns a run for their money in this game, man. I mean, the final box score was basically an 11-point game, but I just love what the Pelicans are doing so far. You got Brandon Ingram, who's a stud. You got CJ McCollum, also a stud. And JV can just go and get you a mean double-double. Unfortunately, though, I just think that it's just the best team in the NBA right now, man. I mean, Phoenix is easily 1-8 deep. And you cannot say that about a lot of teams, but they are 1-8 deep. They are great on every asset. I mean, Chris Paul continues to do amazing things with that crazy 30-point, 10-assist performance. I just don't see them overpowering Phoenix outside of maybe that one-off game.
Yeah, and the crazy part about this one, I was watching this at the end. CP3, for those of you watching, absolutely took over in the fourth quarter. The Pelicans kind of had a little run, and they got kind of tight, and then it was just every single play after that, it was like the Chris Paul show. He was taking threes. He was beating people to the rim. It's like you forget he's almost 37 years old. The point guard, absolutely disgusting. Obviously, my favorite point guard of this generation. I mean, what he does is absolutely special. And to me, Dan, I know this is more of a bigger picture argument, but his dominance in the fourth quarter of that game continues to show why Devin Booker, unfortunately, just can't be taken that seriously as an MVP candidate. Because when you have a guy like Chris Paul on the other side of you, it just, that's such a huge help that other players in the league just don't have. And kind of as you touched on, the Suns just continue to show up their depth. You got to just give respect to the Pelicans. They scratched, they clawed, they did keep it competitive compared to like how the Hawks looked, but it's just not enough against the Phoenix Suns. I think the Phoenix Suns are going all the way.
All right, well, let's wait and find out, man. I mean, that series, I think, is going to be probably not the most entertaining one, but it might be the one filled with the most surprises.
Yeah.
That about wraps it up for us, guys. By the time we're coming back, we're going to be coming back to you guys on a Thursday night schedule. We'll have played probably another one to two games, depending on the series, so we'll definitely get a better gauge on how some of these series are playing out. And just a better update on what we can expect possibly in the second round. Brian, do you have any parting words?
No, just a pretty good weekend of games for sure. I'm excited for that Wednesday game two, Brooklyn versus Boston. I think it's the game everyone has circled. But even that Minnesota versus Memphis series, like that's going to be must watch also. So those are to me the two series to watch moving forward.
I completely agree. So, guys, make sure to interact with us on social. We love interacting with you guys. We love all the feedback, especially as we find out more and more of these NBA regular season awards. I'm sure you guys are going to want to stay tuned just to hear those. And, yeah, man, we're going to hit you guys back up on Thursday. Make sure to follow the pod. That way you know when the next episode drops. And until next time, guys, have a good one.